It's Tuesday, July 28th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. I want to open up today with a little talk about my email. I get a lot of emails at stash@normal.org and some of the other addresses that I have out there, and most of you emailing me are great people that are really interested in changing marijuana laws or asking a question of Dr. Earlywine or Danny Danko or some of the people that I interview on the Stash. But there's enough of you out there that are, well, how can I put it? Kooky. Quit sending me the emails about the phone number that will legalize pot, for example, some little 900 number or something. It's just a joke. It was a telephone polling company that makes the dial-a-joke type of things. Obama is not going to legalize if he gets a million phone calls to that number. And for those of you with the conspiracy theories out there, I've been reading some lately that Normal doesn't really want to legalize because they're all lawyers who would lose their jobs, and I'd lose my job, and we'd all lose our jobs if marijuana was legal. Do you know how much more money I'd be making in any other job with the same skills that we're using here at Normal? Come on now. And this idea that there's some George Soros conspiracy to control the world and dominate all marijuana production so that no one can grow and only he can become rich. Get real. Conspiracy theories? Look, they couldn't even cover up a break-in at the Watergate Hotel, so I don't put much stock into these conspiracy theories. And then there's the really guano loco people out there that have all sorts of insults and terrible things to say to me about my opinions or whatever, and I'm always happy to engage in a civil and reasonable debate, but you start calling me idiot or questioning my intellectual honesty or my ethics or integrity, that's when the conversation needs to stop, because I've got far more people to speak to than to have to waste my time on that. So just to get that out of the way, the rest of you, please keep sending your emails to stash@normal.org. And now it's time for some shout-outs. It's a Normal shout-out. Got an email today from a man in Nebraska who's looking at joining up with other Nebraskans to form a Normal chapter in that state. We'd love to see that. And another new emailer from Kentucky looking to join with the other emailers I've talked about in past stashes in forming a Kentucky Normal. So keep those emails coming. We'll get y'all hooked up. We'll find a way to put you together and make a Normal chapter. Now, coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines and a look at legalization progressing in California and Oregon with four separate ballot initiatives. Crime rates in California have been dropping, but guess what's been going up? Colorado dispensaries are thriving. And another look at Mexican officials in the U.S. who are being assassinated by their drug cartel enemies. Today's Tuesday, so Eric Brenner brings us the California Marijuana Report, featuring a former guest of the Stash, Eugene Davidovich, with some more news on his trial and tribulations, I guess, in San Diego County. For our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, it's Variety Tuesday, and we give you a little Fire by Bezogal. And then for our Government at Work segment, we speak with Paul Armentano with a little advice for our judicial branch, namely the defense attorneys who are defending marijuana clients who are accused of failing drug tests because they've reinitiated their marijuana use. Paul's got some very interesting science that has been proven to help people in these kind of cases. Y'all need to listen up to it. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Marijuana legalization moving forward in California and Oregon. Oakland-based activists have filed a ballot initiative with the Attorney General that would legalize marijuana in California and allow counties to establish local tax systems to tax and regulate the plant and its products. Activists have 150 days from filing to gather 434,000 signatures to qualify for the statewide ballot in November 2010. The initiative is being spearheaded by medical marijuana entrepreneur Richard Lee, founder of Oaksterdam University. Within the last several months, California Assemblymember Tom Ammiano introduced a bill to tax and regulate marijuana like alcohol. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger said marijuana legalization should be considered and debated. Oakland voters overwhelmingly adopted an initiative to tax medical marijuana, and for the first time ever in a statewide field poll, a majority of California voters, 56%, expressed support for legalizing and taxing marijuana. Outside the state, New York Governor David Patterson joined Schwarzenegger's call. Arizona Attorney General Terry Goddard suggested national policymakers debate marijuana legalization as a way to cripple both Mexican and U.S. gangs. And an ABC News Washington Post poll found 46% of Americans nationwide now favor legalizing small amounts of marijuana for personal use, more than double its level 12 years ago. The State Board of Equalization concluded that California would generate $1.4 billion in new annual tax revenue if Assemblymember Ammiano's bill to tax and regulate marijuana like alcohol were adopted. According to the Attorney General, 74,000 Californians were arrested for marijuana offenses in 2007, nearly 17,000 under the age of 18. 78% of all arrests were misdemeanors. Marijuana arrests in California increased nearly 25% since 2005, while arrests for all other controlled substances and most violent crimes fell. The Drug Policy Alliance estimates the costs incurred by California's criminal justice system as a result of current marijuana prohibition laws to be nearly $260 million a year. Richard Lee's Tax Cannabis 2010 proposal is available online at taxcannabis2010.org. There's another California initiative called California Cannabis Initiative 2010, spearheaded by Lifetime Normal Legal Committee member Omar Figueroa and Joe Rogaway, available at californiacannabisinitiative.org. Meanwhile, farther north in Oregon, Normal board member and Oregon Normal executive director Madeline Martinez has filed the Oregon Cannabis Tolerance Act of 2010, a measure to legalize marijuana and distribute it through a state cannabis store system, not unlike, but separate from, liquor stores, while the THC Foundation's Paul Stanford has filed the revised Oregon Cannabis Tax Act of 2010, which you can find at cannabistaxact.org or octa2010.org, that seeks a similar solution but also adds specific definitions of hemp industry. Both OCTAs leave the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act intact and preserve the right of citizens to maintain personal, non-commercial grows without taxation. Drug Policy Alliance and others admit they'd rather see this sort of push in 2012 when there would be more support. Some feel to push in 2010 is too soon, and a loss at the polls will set the movement back. I disagree. I always say when we're talking about it, we're winning. Well, when we're voting on it, we're getting exactly what we want, a chance to have our voices heard. I don't think it is ever too soon or inadvisable to vote for our freedom. The last legalization proposals in Nevada got 39% and 44% of the vote, so I would see any legalization proposal that clears 40% in California and Oregon as a success. California crime stats show crime dropping, but marijuana arrests skyrocketing. From the Center for Juvenile and Criminal Justice. The 2008 figures show California's crime index, the key offenses reported to police, stands at its lowest level since 1963, including the lowest rates of homicide in 40 years. Among youth, 2008 arrest rates continue the trend of the last 7 years, with felony rates at their lowest level since statistics were first kept in 1955 and record low overall arrest rates around half the level of the 1950s. For every race and both sexes, youth crime rates are at their lowest trough since reliable records have been kept. Of course, fair is fair. Those who would own crime decreases should also own crime increases. California's new 2007 and 2008 figures contain some truly bad news as well. The aging crime and drug abuse waves continue to crest. Here, we have a pretty good idea what went wrong. Conservatives in power fought the 1980s and 1990s middle-aged drug and crime surge by tossing tens, then hundreds of thousands in prison for longer periods, which, it turns out, actually worsens addiction. Who would have known? Liberals ignored the crisis altogether and still do. In 2007, a record 4,100 Californians died from overdoses of illicit drugs, triple the number in 1980. Now we have what no one thought possible, a burgeoning 40 and 50 age crime epidemic whose felony totals rocketed from 22,000 in 1980 to 112,000 in 2008. How has California law enforcement attacked this graying crime scourge driven by surging abuse of heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, pills, and booze? By drastically boosting arrests for one particular offense, wait for it, misdemeanor marijuana possession. Note carefully, arrest rates for violent crimes, property offenses, felony drug sales, all other drugs, all felonies, all misdemeanors, that is virtually everything else, declined, often sharply, over the last 15 years. But arrests of Californians for simple marijuana possession rocketed from 21,000 in 1990 to 61,000 in 2008, a population-adjusted rate leap of 127%. Where did this lunatic strategy come from? Granted, there's a massive aging drug crisis bellowing for attention, but it's not pot. Meanwhile, crime clearance reports show that in 2008, law enforcement failed to solve 43% of all reported murders, 58% of reported rapes, and 57% of felony violent crimes, one of the worst years for policing on record. The reefer mad, like the Officer X who was on the Rob Van Dam show when I guested, would say that it's because of the marijuana arrests that crime rates are so low. This is what I call magic tiger rock thinking. See, I've had this magic tiger rock ever since I was a kid, and since I've had it, no tigers have attacked me. Policing is a zero-sum game. Officer time spent on a misdemeanor marijuana possession arrest is time not spent on patrol for real crime. This is how prohibition endangers even those who don't use cannabis. Busting potheads is an easy day at work. Tracking down murderers, rapists, and thugs is real work, and those people shoot back. Medical marijuana dispensaries thriving in Colorado. From the Summit Daily News. Boulder County Caregivers offers 16 glass jars of marijuana with names like Skinny Pineapple and Early Pearl Maui, priced at $375 to $420 an ounce. There are marijuana capsules and snacks made with cannabis butter, such as Rice Krispie Treats. Russian palladium today is trading at $250 to $262 per ounce. It is the softest of the platinum group metals and is used in things like catalytic converters, cell phones, and computers. It is a fairly rare material which must be laboriously mined underground. Somehow, this valuable, useful, rare earth metal costs less for the men and machinery to dig up, smelt, process, pack, and ship overseas than the flowers of a locally grown bush. I can get a wholesale ounce of Spanish saffron today for $89.95 wholesale, which sells for a suggested $129.95 retail. Saffron is the individual threads of the saffron flower, which must be hand-picked. It grows mostly in Iran and Spain, and each flower produces only 3 threads. It takes 75,000 flowers to produce a pound. Somehow, this valuable, useful, rare flower costs less for the men to harvest, hand-pick the tiny threads from each individual flower, dry and vacuum pack, and ship overseas than the flowers of a locally grown bush. One of the rarest and most expensive cognacs in the world is France's Rémy Martin Cognac Black Pearl Louis XIII. It is made from a 100-year-old fruit brandy and aged in a single barrel that is several centuries old. It sells for $28,000 for a 1.75-liter bottle, or about $464 per ounce. Somehow, this valuable, rare, historical luxury liquor costs just a little more for the men to ferment, bottle, and ship overseas than the flowers of a locally grown bush. The total number of patients is expected to rise to 15,000 by year's end, according to the State Health Department, which blames the rapid increase on patient confidentiality guarantees and federal plans to stop raiding medical marijuana operations, which the U.S. government considers illegal. Blames the rapid increase? Shouldn't that be credits the rapid increase? Why is it that when businesses have rapid growth, that's growing the economy, and when government programs have rapid growth, that's serving the people, but when medical marijuana patient rolls rise, that's abuse of the system? Since December, the average patient age in Colorado has dropped from 42 to 24, raising more questions about abuses. Because younger people don't get glaucoma, cancer, HIV/AIDS, multiple sclerosis, migraines, fibromyalgia, etc. Before the dispensaries, what point was there in registering? The older patient and the younger patient would both be growing their own or buying it on the black market. Older patients would be more likely to want to protect their possessions and family and be in a better position to pay the fee to the state to be legal. If the average age is down, then it is just normalizing to where it should be without artificial barriers like being forced to buy in an illegal market. The dispensary's waiting room could be found in a dentist's office, save for coffee table reading material that includes a copy of High Times and a Timothy Leary book. Spice jars feature samples of marijuana available for sale. All sales are by appointment only, and Lee's business collects about $10,000 in sales tax a month. Lee's patients are mainly middle-aged women with multiple sclerosis and men coping with hepatitis C. One employee says he takes tincture drops to help prevent seizures. A customer, a jiu-jitsu coach, said he uses it to treat pain from 4 surgeries and regular fights. Today, Lee, a self-described soccer and karate mom, has 7 employees, offers health insurance, and plans to add 401k benefits. She worries federal agents might raid her business, even though the Obama administration says the government will stop targeting medical marijuana operations that are in line with state law. These are good things, and don't think that I oppose dispensaries, because I don't. If two people want to engage in commerce and agree to ridiculous prices for an herb, I'll support that to my dying day. What I have a problem with is that it seems that the black market prices and profits are becoming the de facto standard for what people envision from a legal marijuana market. My old weed dealer used to tell me it was the risk of prosecution that justified his outlaw untaxed profits. Now that marijuana is semi-legal in Colorado and California and the feds have backed off, those people making the profits don't have that risk. So then, the high prices and profits must exist because of the risk the rest of us non-medical users and growers and sellers are taking due to marijuana prohibition. The people buying and selling with impunity are profiting from the arrests that ruin the lives of the rest of us and keep the price of weed at luxury cognac levels. Cheerleaders of this capitalism tell me that with more dispensaries come more competition and thus lower prices. With 70 Colorado dispensaries and over 700 California dispensaries, how much longer before that competition factor kicks in? All right, here's my fear. Prohibited marijuana supports a myriad of industries, and it won't become legal until those industries can shape legal marijuana into a system where they can continue to make money. Locking people up becomes drug courts and mandatory rehab. Medical marijuana becomes Sativex or some inhaler. The guy who has the hookup becomes the doctor who makes the recommendations. The dealer becomes the dispensary. Nothing changes but the names as cannabis consumers continue to be fleeced for a plant product that should cost as much as grapes or strawberries, or at least as cheap as saffron. Mexican official working for U.S. feds gunned down in America. From the Associated Press, El Paso, Texas. The 8 bullets that leveled Jose Daniel Gonzalez Galeana outside his home, just doors from the city's police chief, were fired at close range and left little doubt about their message. Gonzalez, a Juarez cartel lieutenant, shot on his quiet El Paso cul-de-sac this spring, was working for U.S. officials as a confidential informant, sources told the Associated Press, and experts suspect his slaying may be the first time assassins from one of Mexico's violent drug gangs have killed a ranking cartel member on American soil. Cartel-affiliated hitmen have violently and fatally disciplined low-level American-based drug dealers in the U.S., but El Paso police said Gonzalez was a lieutenant in the Juarez cartel, which traffics in marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. The cartel was once among the most dangerous in Mexico, but has recently lost some standing because of arrests, deaths, and infighting. El Paso police don't yet have an official motive in Gonzalez's slaying, but Chief Allen said detectives are working on the assumption that a cartel colleague discovered he was discussing their illegal activities with federal agents. How many gangland-style executions will have to take place on American streets before we get serious about legalizing these murderers right out of business? I hear a few people complain about taxing and regulating marijuana as a legal substance, because then the big bad old government will have its hands on it. But last I checked, the IRS doesn't send hitmen out to quiet residential neighborhoods to deliver a message about delinquent tax payments.
Win people over. You can't just drone on like Ben Stein. You've got to have a little more showmanship. Here, watch.
NormalCon 2009. Yes, We Cannabis. September 24th through 26th, 2009 in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure. And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
I think it's time for debate, and I think that we ought to study very carefully on what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana.
At our 38th annual conference, you'll learn all the facts you need in the debate to legalize marijuana.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary, and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the Drug Czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy. The answer is no, I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President, or waiting until the last minute to book your trip to NormalCon 2009. Early bird registration rates apply until August. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at norml.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL.
This is the California Marijuana Report for the week of July 27, 2009. I'm Eric Brenner. We have an update on our friend in San Diego, Eugene Davinovich, who is facing four marijuana felony charges for selling medical pot to an undercover narc. We then head to Marin County and check in with Quicksilver Messenger Service on our California Marijuana Music segment, only on the California Marijuana Report. San Diego man continues to face four marijuana felony charges. Eugene Davinovich was previously featured on the California Marijuana Report after being set up by Detective Henderson of the San Diego Police Department. He sold him 2/8 of pot. Eugene is now facing four felony counts. Eugene Davinovich, welcome back to the California Marijuana Report. Please tell us what happened at your last hearing.
Prosecution presented their expert witness, who was Detective DeCastro, of the San Diego Police Department, who was the chief investigator in Operation Green RX, and he testified that, in his opinion, it was not a collective. He also testified that his medical cannabis-related training was from a summit or a convention that he had attended in Sacramento, at which he was given a handout. He didn't mention the details of that handout, but come to find out after the preliminary hearing, this was the California Narcotic Officers Association Summit, and the handout is called Use of Marijuana as, in quotes, medicine. And it goes on and on about how marijuana is not medicine, is illegal, highly addictive, how Normal is an evil organization out to legalize pot for kids and so on and so forth. It really is insane, the propaganda in that three-page handout that this detective based his expert testimony on. And the most amazing part is that the judge in this hearing accepted that over our expert witness that has actually worked with the legislatures in a consulting fashion when Prop 215 was originally developed. So he worked with the people who wrote the actual law. So this is what happened at my last hearing. Since then, there's only been one other hearing, which was supposed to be an arraignment yesterday. However, that arraignment has been continued now until August 28th, which will give me, hopefully, enough time to gather the required funds to retain my attorney, Mr. McCabe, further, so that I can have him as my defense counsel throughout the trial. What I need to gather right now to retain him until trial is I need $2,500. That's the goal by August 28th.
Eugene, is there an address or a PayPal account number we can give listeners to help with your defense?
Absolutely. My PayPal account is under my email address, which is eugene.davidovich@gmail.com. There's also a PayPal link where people can contribute. It's on my website, www.eugenedavidovich.com, as well as you can mail checks or money orders to a P.O. box. And if I could give that P.O. box address out, it's P.O. Box 900-303, San Diego, California, 92, 190.
Okay, so Eugene, basically everybody's very concerned. We're all hoping for the best here. What is the situation with the San Diego District Attorney? What is her name, and what number should we have listeners call to kindly ask her to drop this case immediately?
Well, her name is Bonnie Dumanis. That's the San Diego District Attorney's Office, who, that's our elected San Diego District Attorney. Her phone number, her office phone number, if I can give that out, is 619-531-4040. Again, that's 619-531-4040. And the email address is publicaffairs@sdcea.org. That's publicaffairs@sdcea.org.
And Eugene, what is the message you would like the listeners and us to give the district attorney in regards to your case?
The first thing is that Operation Green RX needs to stop. The continued prosecution of patients, the continued harassment of collectives, and this bias-driven war to end medical marijuana in the state needs to stop. The charges in my case should be dropped, and the district attorney should embrace regulations and work with patients to establish guidelines which people can follow who want to follow the law, rather than continue these prosecutions. Those are the main things that I think people can ask for. And the number one most important thing is that we need to write the grand jury. We need to ask the San Diego grand jury to investigate Operation Green RX, to find out who is paying for this, who authorized this, where did this come from. This operation is illegal. It needs to stop.
Eugene, tell me about the testimony from Detective Henderson and what he said about the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Well, when Detective Henderson was asked on the stand at my preliminary hearing about what Operation Endless Summer and Operation Green RX was and the details of it, he explained, quote, "The list was taken from the normal website." Yes. I think off the list, there were 20 numbers of places. I think of those, maybe 4 or 5 were non-existent, so 15 or 16 were targeted. Mr. McCabe goes on, which is my attorney, to ask him, "In which you posed as a patient and received marijuana?" The answer is yes. Later on in the preliminary hearing, Mr. McCabe, my attorney, asked him another question, and the individual who conceived this operation, was that Detective DeCastro? Was he one of the primary organizers of this particular operation? Detective Henderson went on to answer yes. I remember Damon Mosler was there, and I believe Chris Lindbergh was also part of it. And Mr. McCabe then went on to ask Detective Henderson, "Have you yourself had any training in the operation of medical marijuana laws?" The detective went on to answer, "During the 200 hours of related narcotics training, I think I had about 1 hour. Some of those quotes, and that's just the beginning of it. There's 142 plus pages of testimony from these detectives about how they specifically targeted medical cannabis patients and medical cannabis collectives listed on the normal list here in San Diego. They go on to talk about their training and, as I mentioned previously, what it's based on. And
now some California marijuana music. This week we head to Marin County and visit with Quicksilver Messenger Service. John Cipollina, Dino Valente, Gary Duncan, David Freiberg, Nikki Hopkins, and Gregory Elmore. Here's Cobra from the album Just for Love. Quicksilver Messenger Service are California rock legends, only on the California Marijuana Report. We'll be right back. This has been the California Marijuana Report for the week of July 27, 2009. Special thanks to Eugene Davinovich, Quicksilver Messenger Service, Buzzy Linhart, Dr. Johnny Guitar Watson, and of course NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Please join our group on Facebook. I'm Eric Brenner for the California Marijuana Report.
Hey Tokers, this is Radical Russ. There's only one thing I love as much as fine Oregon Bud, and that's spicy food so hot it'll peel paint. Thanks to the generous sponsorship of HerbAgeDesigns.com, I'm putting both my true loves to the test to support the launch of NORML Show Live. It's the El Jefe Chicken Hot Wings Eating Contest, Friday, August 28th, here in Portland, and the contest benefits the American Red Cross, another favorite charity of mine. You can help. We're signing up pledges for the contest starting as low as 25 cents per wing, up to the 20 wings I'm pledging to eat. You can win, too. The top money entry and a randomly selected entry win HerbAge prizes and one of my Starfish Designs Gandalf-style pieces of glass art. Send in your entry to stash@normal.org with the subject Hot Wings Contest and tell me how much you'll pledge per wing, up to 20 wings. Also include your real name, age, and shipping address should you win the prize. Only entries from adults 18 and older will be accepted. Starfish Designs prizes will not be shipped to Idaho, Pennsylvania, or Indiana.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. It's Variety Tuesday, and we hear Fire from Rude Boy Bizagal from Portugal. And that's Tam calling you Rude Boy, because I don't know what the hell that means. Bizagal plays rude rock reggae music, blending reggae and hip-hop with rock. He is involved in numerous musical projects. Bizagal is a DJ, producer, solo artist, band member, and creates Dope Sessions, which has brought many great artists to Portugal. To get the latest about Bizagal, check out myspace.com/Bizagal, that's B-E-Z-E-G-O-L, and registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Fire by Bizagal. Thank you.
bring the last of the CE. Hey. To make this record, I had to pay the money. Hey. I don't know why, but sometimes it comes at me. Hey. A certain feeling of criminality. Hey. Don't like police and police don't like me. Hey. Just because I smoke and know me pass it. Be asking for no trouble, me just want peace. Hey. But once in my direction, be ready for this. Hey. You run, you run, you run. Until you stop, hey. Because you just got all up, because you got shot, hey. Among the living dead is not where I want to be, hey. No boxing with the devil because my soul is free, hey. Me sit to go helps me keep me head straight, hey. A bella in me conscience let me know I can be
late. The man but why, why are in the vein? Smoking up the ganja comes to drive you all insane. Up on your city, 2003, taking on control and we ain't asking nobody.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals, they're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Tuesday is our look at your government at work here at the Audio Stash. While the inevitable re-legalization of cannabis hemp will have to happen at the federal level, the steps leading to that destination take place at the state and municipal levels. We focus in on the initiatives, bills, and amendments regarding cannabis across all 50 states and what activists like you are doing to enact a positive reform to our cruel and outdated marijuana laws.
Body does the ego cry. The birds, they sing, the creatures learn. It's an honest day's work. Yeah, 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 yeah. It's an honest day's work.
If you're working hard to make an impact in your city and state, please email us at stash@normal.org. And let's share your local efforts with the worldwide cannabis community. Together, we can affect our government at work.
The afternoon pollution rises high into the sky. How can we still deny the truth?
We're here visiting with NORML's Deputy Director, Paul Armentano. Paul gave a remarkable presentation at the Aspen Legal Seminar this last June, and it had to do with the pharmacokinetics of cannabis, and particularly about drug testing and how what we thought we might have known about drug testing isn't quite as reliable as we had thought, or how criminal defense attorneys might use this information to help those of us that are in trouble with the law. So, Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Let's tell our listeners a little bit about what you're talking about here with this these new studies that are talking about the pharmacokinetics, what exactly that word means, too.
Sure, it's a mouthful, Russ, I understand. But to break it down for folks, you know, pharmacokinetics, when you're talking about pharmacokinetics for marijuana or really any other substance, what you're talking about specifically is what happens to the substance when one has ingested it in their body. Specifically, we are talking about how the substance is metabolized, how it is distributed throughout the body, and how essentially it is eliminated from the body. So those are the three aspects we're talking about, and as people are well aware from marijuana, there is a lot of confusion over the way marijuana is distributed throughout the body, the way it's broken down, and certainly there's a whole lot of controversy regarding how it is eliminated after one has used the drug. So that's essentially what I was talking about, and I was stressing that for criminal defense attorneys who have clients who often face the specter of drug testing as a condition of probation or parole, or for criminal defense attorneys that are dealing with these cases of DUI marijuana, it is very important for them to understand the pharmacokinetics of marijuana so that they can better defend their client.
And how this can play out in real life, in the presentation you talked about people who were chronic users and having this elimination of the THC metabolite from their system isn't sort of a linear thing where you can easily predict, you know, how long it's going to take before you pass or fail, or even failing after you've passed. Tell our listeners a little bit about those crazy things.
Sure. This comes up quite often because, as many folks are well aware, generally it is a requirement by the state that a person remain drug-free from illicit substances like marijuana as a condition of probation or parole. And oftentimes you have individuals who were chronic users of marijuana or they're medical users of marijuana in the time period leading up to their probation or parole. And the state will, you know, begin drug testing these individuals, you know, quite quickly, sometimes only a couple weeks after they have ceased using marijuana. And what happens for these individuals is that they will continue for a period of time, and that time could be a few weeks, it could be a few months, but they will continue to test positive for the residual THC metabolite known as carboxy-THC. And what will happen is there will be a debate. The prosecution will argue that these strings of positive tests are in fact evidence that the person is continuing to use marijuana and that they are not complying with their probation or parole, and they will seek to put them in jail. Whereas the client oftentimes will be adamant and say that in fact they are no longer using marijuana, but their system is taking several weeks or in some cases several months to eliminate this byproduct. And unfortunately for many individuals, oftentimes their attorneys are not well enough aware of the science to be able to challenge the prosecution's arguments. Just recently I was involved and I was brought in as an expert in a case, and in this matter the prosecution was arguing that even a heavy long-time user of marijuana should be testing negative on a drug test within 2 weeks. And whereas the scientific literature is quite clear on this, that a person could test positive for as long as, in some cases, 75 to 100 days after ceasing their use of marijuana. So individuals that work on this issue, and criminal defense attorneys especially, need to acclimate themselves with the literature so that they can properly defend their clients in court. To bring up or to mention a point that you had brought up earlier as well, when an individual stops using marijuana and their body eliminates this byproduct, it doesn't just take time, but there are fluctuations in the amount of this byproduct that the body will excrete or eliminate over time. And what happens is when a person is tested on consecutive days or weeks, what you find is that their levels fluctuate. They rise and they dip irrespective of new marijuana use. However, in most cases, the prosecution is going to argue that any rise in a person's marijuana metabolite levels on a drug test is indicative of new use, when in fact the literature makes it quite clear that this is just a phenomenon that is associated with the excretion pattern of marijuana. And criminal defense attorneys should be arguing, and they should be challenging these assertions from the federal government or from the state government on behalf of their client, even when they've tested positive for many weeks after they stopped using, or even when their levels have been at higher levels on consecutive drug tests. That is not necessarily indicative of new use.
Yeah, and this speaks back to, you know, we talk about a lot of times the drug czar will come out and say, you know, nobody's in jail for marijuana. And one of the points we bring up is that people sometimes go to jail because of, you know, failing a probationary UA or a parole UA. And in this case, they may be failing through no fault of their own, through the use of marijuana. They may have been negative for, like you said, 75 to 100 days. So where do we go from here as far as using this information and disseminating to criminal justice attorneys? And do you anticipate any blowback from the authorities, from the prosecutors, to try to find new ways of testing people?
Well, to touch on a point you mentioned earlier, yes, it's true. You know, many people are in jail or are in prison, not just people convicted of marijuana-related crimes, but people that are convicted of non-drug-related crimes who are actually sent to prison or sent to jail because they flunked their drug test while on probation or parole for marijuana. This happens time and time again as well. So while they're not in jail or in prison for marijuana use per se, it is their use of marijuana, or it is their assumed use of marijuana, that has actually landed them behind bars. But to your follow-up question, I wouldn't necessarily say there's blowback, but it is understood that most individuals within the prosecution are not willing at first to accept these arguments from defense attorneys that, in fact, their client is simply continuing to test positive for marijuana because there's a very slow excretion pattern of the drug itself. This needs to be evidence that needs to go before a judge and that needs to be well understood, because the state is going to argue, as they have been arguing for some time, that in fact this is a black and white issue, when the science is quite clear that this is anything but black and white. There is a paper that is floating around out there that claims to be a guide for judges who are dealing with drug courts and prosecutors who are dealing with drug courts that argues that they should never accept the claim that a defendant has tested positive for marijuana for a period of longer than about 3 weeks. They should never accept that that phenomenon can happen unless the person is continuing to use marijuana. And they dismiss some of the literature that says otherwise by simply saying the studies are too old or the studies are methodologically flawed, but there's actually no basis for their criticism. They simply want to disregard the science because they find it to be inconvenient. There again, that is why I stress it is important for defense attorneys dealing with this subject matter to really understand the literature and understand these arguments, because, you know, keeping their client out of jail probably depends on it.
It's good information to have. And will there be any official papers from Normal or published on our website where people can get this information?
They're actually in the drug testing section of Normal. I believe there are one or two papers that are quite valuable in reviewing this data. I know there is a PDF, a complete text of a review from about 1996 that mentioned four or five published papers that have found in clinical trials individuals who are being monitored so that we know they have maintained their abstinence, testing positive for, in some cases, 90 days, 93 days, 101 days after their use has ceased. And that paper is a terrific reference for individuals who want to take a look at what some of the available literature is that is out there on this subject.
All right. Well, Paul Armentano, the Deputy Director of Normal, will be keeping an eye on this, I'm sure, and we'll give you all the information as it becomes available. Thanks, Paul, for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with reminders from the Normal calendar of events available online at norml.org/calendar. Tomorrow at 7 p.m. local time, the Salt Lake City Normal Board of Directors will be meeting at the Sugar House Coffee at 21st South, 1000 East in Salt Lake. Got any questions, call 801-860-6085. Let's get a great Normal chapter going right down there in the Beehive State. Also want to remind you that you can still sponsor me in the El Jefe Hot Wings Eating Contest. You can email me at stash@normal.org for more details. And if you'd still like to make a donation to help Normal Show Live get off the ground, set your browser to stash.normal.org/donate. Every little bit helps. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community from 106 degree Portland, Oregon. Take care of each other, tokers.